we're coming up now to Christmas party season. Is there things that you believe that men should do to make women feel more confident about attending these events? Because I've got no doubt that there will be women within the construction industry that are extremely reluctant to attend their Christmas party this year because they fear how they're going to get treated by their male colleagues.
Keep your eyes and your hands to yourself.
Okay, good advice. It's a good starting point.
Yeah, I think it's an individual thing, isn't it? It's an individual responsibility to act as a decent human being. But I would say on the sort of topic of harassment, that everyone needs to be geared up to have the right processes in place as an employer or as a human being to address it and to act on it if someone has reported it.
Hear more forthright chat from Boulders Brass leader Catherine Evans and friend of the podcast Fiona Connor after this message.
At Central Piling, we have a fleet of continuous flight auger, rotary board and driven rigs of various sizes. This caters for most piling and retaining wall needs. Our team's technical, logistical and operational strengths provide clients with a flexible and reliable design and build solution across England and Wales. We pride ourselves on understanding the environment within which we work and being a responsible contractor. To ensure greater efficiency and meet our growth targets, we are always developing our people, plant and services. We now offer a plant and operator hire service, including ancillary equipment. For more details, please visit centralpiling.com or phone 01787 474 000. That's 01787 474 000.
Today on the Breaking Ground podcast, I'm joined by Catherine Evans. Catherine's a geotechnical manager at Tarmac, and returning is Fiona Connor, who is now a senior design engineer at Gavin and Doherty GeoSolutions. Fiona, let me come to you. I think last time you were on the recording, you were working in a completely different role. Remind me where you were and kind of the transition in your career in the last 18 months.
So I previously worked at Applied Geology, which was a small contracting and consultancy geotechnical firm in the UK, and moved into more of a design role. Gavin and Doherty is based in Ireland, so that's been quite an exciting transition to, obviously I'm still based in the UK, work from home, but it's quite different to work for a full consultant and based in Ireland as well. So a range of geologies and also different form of Euro codes if you're into the geeky side of things. So it's been really good and an interesting learning experience.
That's great. It's exciting to see your progression, and it sounds like a really good company to be involved with. When people ask me about the podcast and maybe they haven't listened to any episodes, I think the episode that you were on is one that I would tend to point to as one of my favourites. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have favourites. It's a bit like children, and I do have a soft spot. But when it comes to impact, I really feel like the episode with yourself and Richard Totti and Jyoti Sadev was probably one of the most meaningful. So those that haven't listened, it was in relation to LGBT issues in the construction industry, and I know personally I had some amazing feedback from that episode and testimonies, and we have one guest come on as a result of being a listener and shared his coming out story actually with the listener. So that was brilliant. If you had much feedback yourself after that experience?
Not too much. I think I speak quite openly quite a lot, so it probably wasn't a surprise to people. it was definitely a great experience. And also people do go, oh yeah, that I remember you were on that. So yeah, no, that was, yeah, it's been positive.
That's really good. And of course, you were kind enough to introduce us to Catherine. Can you tell us how you met Catherine and why you thought this would make a good episode?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the point of the podcast is to raise awareness and share exciting things that are going on in the industry, regardless of what they are, and to promote change. And I met Catherine through my part-time MSc course, and I think we shared a mutual passion for things other than geotechnical engineering as well. So along with frustrations, lecture content, all sorts of things, we seem to have the same opinions on wanting our industries to be better. Yeah, so when Boulders Brass came about, and it was something I really believed was something the industry really needed, I was keen to put you two in contact because this is a great platform for having a discussion. It's quite hard when you're on LinkedIn or you're texting or whatever. It's easier to say what you want to say in a verbal communication, I think, as well. It's easier to have those conversations with people and to understand what it's about. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, yes. So Boulder Brass, well, I'm going to ask Catherine in a moment to explain about the group. I know there's been a terrific article gone in Ground Engineering this week. Catherine, you're a geologist. You specialised in the mining sector, but different Wales. There's probably not many deep mines in Wales these days. So you're more, am I right in saying, involved in sort of management of quarries now?
Yeah, started off in the deep mine, then a coal mine, and then moved to Canada to work in an open cast, and went to a couple of different open casts over there. Didn't really face these problems in the underground mine. It never seemed to be, there were issues, but they were more on the surface. When it got to being underground, I just felt like I was one of everybody else. I think they treated me differently. They all treated me like their daughter. And I'd get questions like, does your mother know you're down here? What does she think of you being down here in this hole? The problems then when I went to Canada, it was completely different there. They really did focus on my age, which seemed to be a problem because I was like, 26, 27, and that seemed to be an issue. The fact that I was a woman seemed to be an issue. I was foreign. That was a big issue. And I was short because I'm 5'2". This seems to be a problem for people. We respect age and height, and I had neither.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Height seems to be such a big thing. When you look at the height of people that head up FTSE 100 companies, like the average height is something like 6'2", which like it's extraordinary tall compared to the average person. So yeah, it leaves a very narrow band of people that are in charge of our organisations. So yeah, we've alluded to it. Boulder Brass, feminist group within construction and geology, which you've created fairly recently, just this year. Yeah. There was issues that had come along, which you've mentioned there in Canada and in the UK. What was the tipping point? What made you think, right, I'm going to actually do something about this?
It was attending a conference back in June. I just returned from maternity leave. This was my second maternity leave. And coming back, having children and actually going through that process, I felt each time I changed a little bit. The second child was a lot harder. I had the baby at home without a midwife. It was just me and my husband. And I had postnatal depression after it as well. And that, it just completely different. And I found out that I'd also had PTSD still hanging around from the first baby. So I'd been dealing with that for 5 years, and COVID came in between. And the masters that I was really struggling to do where I met Fee, because it was just so much going on at once. The way that I could see women being treated, and the way that COVID really did affect women and children, and the decisions that were being made by governments. Welsh government was slightly different, but exactly the same problems. There's no diversity there. That was the tipping point, I guess. It was coming, and I could feel I needed to do something, and I'd been given so many things through my employer, through Tarmac, to be able to lead a network, because I have been leading the Female Voice, which is our women's community. I felt like I already had the base for it. I knew what to do. I knew what made a good network. To lead is not about, you don't lead from the front. It's about putting the team first. And I felt like I needed to gather as many women as I could and show them that if you group together, and you become one voice, it's so much more powerful than one person at the front shouting. So that's how it started, after going to this conference, speaking to a lot of women in geology in Cornwall, noticing that there were parallels all the time between how just facial expressions when you ask them something, how is it being a woman in the business that you work? Oh yeah, it's great, yeah, but you see their faces, something completely different. And you delve a bit deeper over a few glasses of wine and you see that these are all exactly the same problems. It's just because women are so far apart and you're just little islands in these businesses. There's no community, where at Tarmac have built communities, and they're fantastic communities where somebody is given the voice to speak for the people. That's missing in the smaller companies. So that's what I wanted to have, is this multi-sector community, network, tribe, something where we group together, we become one voice and we tackle the problems as a tribe, not just one person standing shouting, because they never get anywhere.
Well, kudos to you for doing it at a time of enormous personal stress, to take that on. You know, I think it says a lot about you. So if we put it into context, women are 13% of the construction industry by number, and certainly on site-based roles, a much smaller percentage. In fact, the last ONS statistics suggested it was 1%, which has grown. So we were down at 0.3% sort of 10 years ago. So if you look at the growth of women in site-based roles, it has grown, but still very much a minority number. And of that 13%, a lot of the individuals will be in administrative roles, so don't necessarily have the authority to make positive change for other women in the industry. So how do I go about joining? Or maybe not me, I've signed up as an ally, but how would a woman listening to this podcast go about joining your group, and what can they expect from it?
Well, it's quite difficult to find like a really obvious route for getting into a group. So I found that if I put a link to it on my page, then there's a really easy one. Just come straight to me and you can click the link and you will join. We have to prove it because it's a closed group. But otherwise, sending it to the women in your workforce so that they can, if you're already in, they can join that way. The allies one, that's the same, like just sending it. It's sort of like a cobweb, the way that it's working at the moment, and it's making its way back up and down the country, sending it to women you think need it. When they join, then we've got phone calls coming up. Well, there's one tonight and there's one next week about, it's just for covering our values and we support each other. So we'll be talking about things that are affecting women's career, whether it's moving up, moving across, like aspirations, what's holding them back, if anything's holding them back. And because we've got so many members from different points in their career, it's really important that we share the mistakes that we've made already and learn from those as a group, rather than having to remake the same mistakes. We've got graduates to CEOs. There's people of every point in their career. And it's hard when you're a graduate, when you first start. It's difficult to know what is acceptable. Gen Z's is just so completely different to the baby boomers, and we've got everything that comes in between, and the millennials, I think, it's just sort of stuck in the middle, not really sure which way we're being pulled at the moment. We can see the positive side of working like a boomer, we can see the positive side of working like a Gen Z, and it's knowing what is comfortable for you. That's where we are now. This has got to be right for you. Don't feel like you're being pushed into being anything like anybody else. We're at a point where you should be recognised for your individuality. So being in the group, I'm hoping that women will be able to share their experiences, share what they're going through. If they've had a bad day, be able to phone somebody, because I've said to one of our members, just give me a ring later on FaceTime and we'll talk something through and we'll find out if there's somebody who can help you in the group. So we've reached out to an HR professional in the group who gave her a ring on a weekend to give her a bit of advice. And it was really important to one of our members that we had somewhere where they could talk about really niche geotechnical and logging issues that they were having, because she'd attended another group, another large women's group, who I won't mention, to get some help for logging mineral, and not mineral, logging core, to find the mineral that they were looking for. And she said there was nobody there who could help me because they were all very polished. The HR professionals, the PR professionals, the women in business. And it's like there was nobody there who were like dirty fingernails women who could have helped me log this core. It's a bit different because you've got all sorts of rules around it. But if you can help somebody out, oh, just use this instrument, then it could really have made her life a lot easier. And because she was just one woman in a group of men and the it was toxic, she just felt like, how... what am I supposed to do here? I'm never actually going to get anywhere because the men in this group don't want to help me.
Yeah, so it's a real mix of kind of structured training sessions, presentations, and the more informal relationships that are built and support networks that happen. So you might not have necessarily a counsellor, but the fact that you've got 200 women already in this network, you can all just... and I lean on each other and the skills that have been acquired.
Yeah, we've got the networking side of it. So you're meeting people who could... it's not about what you know, it's about who knows you. So there's that aspect to it. There's the community aspect where we're not just a network, it's a community as well. But then there's the campaign side of it as well, the catalyst. I think women really like the tribal part of it, is that we are a tribe. And we are strong and we seriously want to make a change here.
Fiona, should men feel threatened by this group?
Absolutely not. No, I think if you think about any room you might walk into on site, there's just a bunch of men, and quite, I don't like to stereotype, but quite often they're having a very similarly insular conversation about something, whether that's construction or geology related, or I don't know what their home life is like at home, or what belt they're wearing, as I've found out recently is a great topic of conversation. So I think it's asking the questions and finding out relatable experiences. I think it's really important for people to be able to have a space that's safe, that they can discuss if something's normal or not. Because if you're one of only a couple of people in your company that's female, like, it's tricky to know if it's because of you or if it's a common experience that other people are having. And I think it's really important to have that safe space. And if men are threatened by the fact that we want equal PPE standards, then there's something going wrong and it's not to do with us. So, yeah, it's not about... it is about being a bit angry, but it's more about, can we unite everyone to be as passionate as we are about this? And that's why there's an allies group. The reason it's not one group is that we still need that safe space to talk about stuff that's impacting us. But equally, we want everyone along for the journey. It's together we can make this change. Otherwise, it's never going to happen. So
completely understand. We're going to talk a lot more about PPE in a short while, but... maybe if we focus initially on some of the cultural issues, there might be men listening thinking, well, it's a man's industry, to coin a phrase. Women should adjust their behaviours to suit. My view is there are certain traits that you see more within females that actually are going to be really beneficial to the men work in the industry. We've got this mental health epidemic. I think it's long been established that women are able to handle mental health problems in a different way, and probably will make progress on this issue more as an industry with their support. And when you look at leadership around the world, the men are doing a pretty bad job of it. And when you look at countries like Denmark and New Zealand, we've got some of the most progressive leaders in the world. So maybe we need a few more women in charge of our countries. But let's talk about language and comments. And I don't want this to be a kind of a space for just talking about all that's gone wrong, but perhaps we can spend a couple of minutes talking about the sort of language that we should all be using. Maybe highlight some of the red flag comments. Who would like to come forward and suggest some of the things that maybe you've experienced or colleagues have experienced that perhaps are just lazy comments, or maybe I've already made some. But I think it's always helpful to learn from the past and you know, change our behaviours in the future.
There's two things. There's like the stuff that everyone would be aware is the wrong thing to say, yet no one calls it out. And there's the stuff people say without thinking about it, that it's sort of an unconscious thing that hurts us, but no one else realises it. So it's two things.
Well, both are important things to be aware of, because being conscious of some of the unconscious things that we say is important, and we can change behaviour by being more self-aware.
We kind of asked the question to members of Boulders Brass as to inappropriate comments that they've experienced, knowing that we were coming on the podcast, to sort of, disappointingly, they were all as sort of anticipated. They're pretty rubbish. But these sort of comments are things that are said on site and in offices that anyone should see as inappropriate and offensive and derogatory, but they still happen. And I think perhaps if you're in a space where there's no women and you think it's 2022 and perhaps everyone shares your mindset that it's unacceptable to say sexist and derogatory things, it's not the case. It's still happening out there. We're still getting really inappropriate things said to us. And it's kind of about changing that mindset and addressing the value of us. Like, we shouldn't be spoken to like that.
You've got like, there would be like the ones that are obviously offensive and they know they're causing offence. And then you've got the ones that are microaggressions, isn't it? The ones that are like institutionalised. They're so systemic that people don't even realise. And the obvious ones like, oh, you take the notes, you've got the nicest handwriting, or somebody said to one of the women on site the other day, one of the geologists, is your name Kettle? Because you need turning on as you walk through. This guy just walked through.
Oh my God.
Sometimes it's just so, I just laugh because this is nothing. You're just gobsmacked, and you're like, it's just funny because this is just so ridiculous. Reading through that list of the sexist comments that our members had faced, I was splitting my sides because I was like, this is so bad that I can't stop laughing that people actually say this. And to those people who received it, it was probably so hurtful at the time and give them a real kick in the confidence.
I think there's also the fact that, yes, I think sometimes men don't know when to step in. It's that they don't want to. Obviously, there's a rise of women empowerment. They don't want to be seen as a male saviour and perhaps annoy a woman for standing up and saying something and calling something out. Whereas literally, if something offensive is said to me, I sort of try and joke it off and de-escalate the situation and just remove myself. If someone was actually like, hi, mate, maybe don't say that, that's not great, then it's someone else taking that emphasis away from the situation. And I think, or even if they felt later when I moved away or something, just being like, hey, mate, that wasn't great thing to say, it would be appreciated. And it's not like you're not acting for us. You're part of the team and you're the one that's sort of meaning that I don't have to call it out or say something later to someone's line manager if it's been particularly offensive. So,
yeah, I think it's pretty rare that I come across anyone making a direct sexist comment. It's those lazy comments, you know, those, like you say, microaggressions, Catherine. When you make comments that potentially trivialise women's role in construction or in life in general.
Getting called sweetheart when you go to site and you're like sitting down to do your induction, sweetheart comes out about 5 times, and I got to the point of almost writing across my hard hat, Catherine, not sweetheart, but I thought I was probably going to make it worse. Yeah, calling somebody, oh, bless her heart, this young girl. And I was thinking, how young is a young girl? 5? Pretty sure they'd be over 18 to work for us. So they're a woman. What are you trying to say there? And that's been like quite a high level meeting. And I didn't notice because I was sitting on the wrong side of where it was happening. I could just go, oh, red flag, looking over at the other chair from female voice. I mean, like, oh, somebody going to say something. But actually, our sponsor, who was one of the directors, he did say something to him. Like, that's not appropriate language. You can't say things like that. But very quietly, so that the whole room didn't hear. So that's a good way of stepping in.
Yeah, it's interesting because... Yeah, I'll go to the petrol station and the woman behind the counter will call me love or darling. It's not always men to women using this sort of terminology, but I suppose it's so weighted in history when men are using it. And when men are using it within a work environment, there is that implied repression of the woman's role within that group. That's why it's so important that men become more aware of their responsibilities when it comes to language. It might not come from a bad place. It might be that person is really good in terms of supporting women within their roles and their business, but language becomes endemic. If people carry on using it. I remember when I used to work on site, everyone swore, and I found myself always swearing, and I'm never somebody that would ever swear growing up. It just becomes part of your vernacular, doesn't it? And I think it needs some momentum behind using more positive language in respect to women to really make this industry a place where women want to come and work and want to stay. I want to talk now a little bit about sexual harassment. We're coming up now to the kind of Christmas party season, and I mean, this is a difficult topic, obviously, and I wouldn't expect you to share any kind of personal experiences or betray any trust, but is there things that you believe that men should do within an office environment, party environment, to make women feel more confident about attending these events? Because I've got no doubt that there will be women within the construction industry that are extremely reluctant to attend their Christmas party this year because they fear how they're going to get treated by their male colleagues.
Keep your eyes and your hands to yourself.
Okay, good advice. It's a good starting point.
Yeah, I think it's an individual thing, isn't it? It's an individual responsibility to act as a decent human being. But I would say on the sort of topic of harassment of any form is that everyone needs to be geared up to have the right processes in place as an employer or as a human being to address it and to act on it if someone has reported it, and to have the right language to ensure they have confidence in the process and the response, and that it's not belittled or dismissed. That's the important thing, I think. Obviously, it's important that it doesn't happen. That would be ideal. But I think hopefully everyone that was listening to the podcast will keep their hands to themselves. But it's more also around the risk of it happening and taking that seriously. So if a woman has raised a concern about something that they might be doing on site or as part of a social activity and they're not comfortable, if they've raised that as a concern, it should be treated like any other concern that they might have regarding health and safety or other things related to workplaces. And sometimes perhaps it isn't treated with the same respect, and then people aren't likely to report it in the future, or they will move workplaces to try and find a more hospitable environment. So it's just that narrative of making sure it's treated with equal concern, like you hope it might be, but sometimes people might not want to share a vehicle with a male colleague if they're driving on a long journey. And if they raise it, that should be taken seriously for due reason. The male colleague might be new to them, or they just get a bad vibe, or absolutely no reason whatsoever. They just don't want to do it, and that should be sort of respected. So parties aside, in any workspace or place, I think that's what's most important, really.
Let's move on now to talk about representation and the design of our systems and our equipment within the construction industry. So as we mentioned, a lot of the leaders within construction, vast majority, are male. And we see that reflected in our equipment, so the design of our safety systems, our PPE. So there was a 2016 TUC report, for instance, which said that only 17% of women in construction wear PPE that is designed specifically for them. Catherine, I know we exchanged a message on LinkedIn last week about some flame retardant overalls specifically designed for women, and we have a female welder that we were struggling to find the right kit for. So thank you very much, first of all, for your assistance in that respect. What progress has been made? Things are moving in the right direction slowly, aren't they?
Definitely. Yeah, from when I first started, there was nothing 14 years ago. I actually had somebody come to site and measured me up and made my PPE for me when I was working underground, and it was amazing, fit wonderfully. Then I was a bit spoiled, because that was what I was expecting forever, that things would fit that well, and soon found out that no, things do not fit that well, especially when you're 5'2". So we're aware of it. A lot of PPE, the big brands, especially the Scandinavian brands, they've been on it for a long time. They've been refining their fit. Their fits are good. Their range is really good. They've got variations in leg length, and maybe sometimes the sizes don't quite work out, because Scandinavian people are a lot bigger than Celtic people like me. But there'll be something there that you can wear. It might just take a while. Then you've got our designers, like the British ones. Leo are amazing with what they're doing. They listen and they develop things that are needed, but not just needed, are niche, like the hijab, and there's a tunic that they've developed that is not a bestseller at all, but that is somebody's way into the industry. If they have religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs that means they want to dress modestly and cover their curves, then this is what they would be looking for. But there's only one company that makes that, and that's Leo, because they've seen that they just care, and that's what you need. You need people to actually care about inclusion, and it's not just a tick box. There's so many places who have just tried to wedge something into the gap in the market by putting something out there that we then get because they are part of our preferred suppliers list. You put it on and realise that, what's this being designed around? Because it's something mythical. This does not fit. Nobody has got this ratioed from their waist to their hips and their thighs. There's you're unable to move. And this is safety equipment. You need to be able to move suddenly, especially if you're around a drill rig. You need to be able to quickly move. You can't quickly move if you're wearing a polycotton that has got no stretch. So it's actually more dangerous than wearing something that is oversized, that you've snipped down, even though you really shouldn't snip it down, especially if you're snipping past the high vis lines. But you've had to adapt a man's piece of safety equipment to fit you, because the women's, which is supposed to be there and you've had to fight for, is a terrible fit. So with that, it's getting better, but people need to do more. And from speaking to these designers, that we are in at that point now where we have got the phase one, like the women's PPE 1.0. We're now like they're designing 2.0, that with the fabrics that move and these terrible cargo trousers, which I'm hoping will just disappear because they awful. Two pockets is not enough for anybody. You need more than two pockets. I want to be able to fit my lunch and my tampons into pockets. So we're getting there. It's just, it's a journey, and it's, we need to continue talking about it and making noise and really congratulating the companies who are doing so well, like Leo. They've done a fantastic job, like Mascot and Blackladder and Scanware. They're great, but we need more of the same because there needs to be choice, especially when it comes to using preferred suppliers.
Shout out to all those companies. It's not just PPE, of course. Things like tools. We spoke about the 1% of the site construction workforce, the operatives and tradespeople that were women. A lot of their tools are designed for male hands, which obviously are bigger. Men, obviously, on average, are able to lift heavier things, bigger lever arms involved. All of those tools have evolved for the shape, the size, the strength of a man. Do you see any progress with the tooling that's available on site?
I don't think I can answer that one. Do you know, Fee?
I don't think so, but there's a general awareness of health and safety and manual handling reduction on site. So not that it's come from a perspective of gender equality, but more so that if you make, and this comes about for anything, if you make something better for one person, generally you're improving it for a whole host of other people. Why should men have really terrible toilet facilities on site or not be expected to have a toilet? Like, if you're putting one there for women, it's obviously benefiting so many other people that, I don't know, might have IBS, just want to use a toilet, which shouldn't really be a revelation to people on site. So, again, I can't say that things have been necessarily reduced. I think all graduate geotechnical engineers will be expected, if they're site-based, to be heavy lifting 20 kg bags of cement, bentonite, gravel. Everything comes in 15 to 20 kilograms. That's not ideal. Maybe we could think about reducing those so that they're appropriate, so that everyone can safely lift them. Otherwise, you have to ask someone if you're not confident to lift that weight, and then you feel like you're putting obligations on other people, which shouldn't be your problem. So yeah, there's a lot more that can still be done. And again, it's a process. And it's also speaking to the people that are using it and not making assumptions, which is perhaps what happened with the first wave of 1.0 PPE, is that they saw that they should be doing something, but then they decided to act on it perhaps before doing any focus groups or finding out what women might actually want, which seems like a logical thing to do, but perhaps didn't quite happen. So yeah, it's part of a process, I guess.
Yeah, the importance of having a diverse working group on something from the very beginning. And the issue that we see with PPE specifically is the products might have been made and the products might be fantastic, but then your product needs to be able to get to a supplier, because your company may go through a supply chain rather than, or a supply company rather than directly to that brand. So they've got to get into that. Then they've got to get out to the companies, and that would be through their procurement department. And then the procurement department are only going to buy things that actually meet the health and safety needs. So you've got all of these different things standing in the way of the person who is actually going to be wearing it, the end user, and the original piece of equipment. And there's just, if you've got all the way along there and something that's been historically very man-dominated, then it's going to be difficult to get a diverse, like, frame of mind and what do people actually need? Who is in our workforce? That was the point of the communities in Tarmac. That's why we set it up, so we could actually get what people needed from outside the company and bring it in, make sure they had what they need. But if you don't have a big company, the chances are you're wearing men's PPE.
Yeah. So if listeners would like to find out a bit more about how the world is designed for men, I can really recommend a book called Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez. It's not just about construction, that's a small element of the book, but it's really interesting to see how the odds are really stacked in men's favour when it comes from everything from a car crash to just designing systems, safe systems of work. Any recommendations other than joining the Boulder Brass LinkedIn group and network for listeners to go to get support if they are struggling with women's rights issues in the workplace? Either Fiona, maybe come to you first. Do you have a podcast, a book, literature that you would recommend people checking out?
Yeah, so I would also recommend the IMO3 Institute of Minerals and Mining. Pride Month, they did a really good podcast around dissecting the intersectional experience. I think Martin Griffin was also on that, who's also a Grand Forum member. And yeah, I suppose it's really important to consider that not every experience for someone from an underrepresented group is equally the same. Obviously, as a white person, we have additional privileges that other people from different backgrounds might not. And also the overlap between disabled women might have a different experience to people that are black, for example. And so it's important. And this podcast provides a really good breakdown of that and how those experiences can overlap, I suppose.
Boulder's Brass, I'm going to say that it's not a white feminist group. We've got women of colour in the group. We want to make sure that they have a voice because it's so different. Body type when it comes to PPE. The physique is completely different in some cases. It's just not thought of. And because of the lack of diversity in groups of people who make the decisions. So the intersectionality side of it is really, really important. We want to be inclusive. We want to have a diverse voice.
I think this episode's actually been really positive. It'll be easy for us to look back with a lot of kind of recrimination and but a very kind of negative spin on the way that women have been treated in the industry, and that'd be completely understandable. But I think what we've done is provided hope and changed the expectations around the way we would expect men to behave in the industry in the future. So thanks so much for doing that, Catherine and Fiona, and look forward to keeping in touch with you through the Boulder's Brass group, which, as we said, is available on LinkedIn, and hopefully some in-person events in the future.
Thank you for the opportunity.